Powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy.
Live from Seahawks training camp.
On 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, you are listening to Jake and Stacy. Jake going to be making his return, his long-awaited return from paternity leave in the 1 p.m. hour. Very interesting mid-show return. Doesn't normally happen.
Yeah, gotta be dramatic about it.
Right?
Jeez.
So instead, you've got just me and Curtis Rogers today. The dream team, though. I mean, really, you don't even need Jake, comma, your best friend. But I know that some of us might feel differently.
I mean, he's probably listening.
I know.
So I'll let you
I know that you miss Jake.
That
I get it. I get
yourself.
It. It's fine. Our training camp coverage is presented by Precor Home Fitness. We are live from the VMAC, from Seahawks training camp, the second day of training camp. The guys just walked off the field from warm-ups, and practice is going to start in an hour and a half. Fans going to get here soon. It is a beautiful day. If you are coming out to training camp, make sure you bring sunscreen, sunglasses, lots and lots of water.
It's warm.
Can't tell you enough. It is hot. It is hot, but it is a beautiful day by Lake Washington.
I'm not going to complain to any players about the heat.
Absolutely not. When Jordan Brooks came up to talk to us, if you missed that, you can hear our interview with Jordan. He also had something to say, some school trash talk about the Big 12 news.
Some horns down.
Some good
yeah.
stuff, horns down. He joined us about 10 minutes ago. If you missed it, you can listen to it in hour one of the Jake and Stacy podcast. Was wearing sweatpants, and it made me nauseous.
Yeah. He's built different.
I know. All these players are just built different. I can't relate. I will tell you that. Anyways, now outside of just outfits, outside of just players wearing some sweats, I have some other observations you guys are going to want to know. So let's get to it with what I saw day one Seahawks training camp. Let's start with this one. It's the name every single person in and outside of Seattle was looking for. It's safety Jamal Adams. Jamal Adams was present. And you guys, while he didn't practice, he was talking with teammates on the sidelines. He's wearing his jersey. He's engaging. A couple fans behind me called out his name. He turned around. He waved at him. He seemed to be in a pretty good mood. I don't blame him at all for not practicing, and I think him being here is a good thing. Whether it's a show of good faith or sportsmanship on his part, or a sign that these negotiations are ongoing but getting someplace, fans should feel good that he was here. And we've all seen a worse holdout situation before in and outside of Seattle, right, Curtis?
Oh, very much so. I don't think there's any other way Seahawks fans can feel about Jamal Adams being present in camp than encouraging. It is encouraging that he is here because you got to be present to make these negotiations happen. We learned that with Bobby Wagner. We also learned that in the opposite sense
yeah.
with guys like Earl Thomas and guys like Cam Chancellor. The Seahawks aren't going to talk to you unless you are here in the flesh. It's good news that he is here and being able to get those negotiations done and taken care of. I don't see any reason why these negotiations won't get done as long as Adams.
Well, and good news that he's here and engaging, right? He's not yes. on the field practicing, which again, if I was worth millions and millions of dollars as a player and I didn't have that guaranteed yet, I'm not going to go up and risk potentially tearing my Achilles or doing something dangerous to lose myself, a lifetime of earning potential. I don't blame him, but he also wasn't off in the corner working out or in the facility doing work or watching tape. He's out here with teammates. He's watching practice. He's talking to younger guys in his jersey. So if you want any kind of update, yeah, we don't have an update right now on the contract, but it otherwise looks like an amicable relationship between Jamal Adams and this team. All right, the next one, Curtis, you're going to like this. Now, look, it's not going to sound like an expert takeaway at the beginning, but I need you to listen to me when I say
okay.
this. Carlos Dunlap is a big dude. If I was...
I mean, that's not saying a lot.
It's not
you.
Saying a lot. I am 5'2". 5'2".
I thought you were 6'1".
I'm 6'1".
That's
and,
right.
And Carlos Dunlap is taller than that.
Yeah, wow.
I was at the table for the first broadcast from training camp watching, and Carlos Dunlap, I'd forgotten, had switched his jersey to number 8 overall. He's already, like, several inches taller than the rest of the defensive ends, but even then looked even bigger with that single digit. And, Curtis, I know that you are about that.
I am about that single digit life when it comes to jersey numbers and specifically defensive linemen. Now, I will say this, though. Number 8, a pretty special number in Seahawks history.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Hasselbeck's jersey number.
Yep.
How are we feeling about Carlos Dunlap wearing Matt Hasselbeck's jersey number?
I'm fine with it because of two reasons. One, Carlos Dunlap, when you talk about, you know, Brock Heward-style body show day one of camp, looks fit.
He wears it well.
He wears it well. He looks, if I was an opposing, say that Carlos Dunlap was a rookie and I was an opposing quarterback that had no idea who he was, I'd want nothing to do with that guy. And I know a lot of fans didn't get to see him, whether at Lumen Field or at training camp, because he was acquired via midseason trade. So a lot of you guys are going to get your first look at him up close and personal this year. It's one thing to see on the page, hey, this is his height, this is his weight. It's another thing to see him next to some of these other guys. He looks ready for the season. All right, you guys, a statement and a takeaway that will surprise absolutely no one. DK Metcalf looks really good early. Looks really solid. His best catch, in my opinion, was a nice little 10 to 12 yard pickup. He was being covered by Jordan Brooks, who we spoke with earlier, and I think he beat him on the inside. It was a little hard to tell with someone in front of me, but it drew a nice cheer from fans. And I'll say this, training camp is basically wide receiver camp with the lack of contact rules that they have. But in a regular season game, that would have been a solid route and catch against any team's best linebacker.
What are your expectations for DK heading into year three? Because he's what, all pro in year two? This dude, the ceiling does not exist for him.
No, I think my expectations are, it's hard to hold. It's one thing to look at like Pro Football Reference and you see, oh, catch rates hovering around 60-something percent, which isn't great. I think Lockett's in the high 70s or so. But it's devoid of context, right? Because when you add context, you think, well, DK's their biggest receiver. He's going to get some desperation heaves from Russell Wilson at times. There are, though, a couple key drops that I know that he would point to and probably want to fix. So if there is one thing, it's not being more athletic, being more aggressive, throwing himself into the playbook. He's a consummate professional. I think what it would be is just cleaning up everything he can to separate himself even more from the rest of the pack. And that would be, if you're a guy getting desperation heaves that's like less than a 50-50 ball and you break and you haul it in, man, that is the Julio Jones level that I know he wants to surpass.
Do you think that he'll establish himself as the clear-cut number one wide receiver the Seahawks have? Because over the last couple of years, it's always been Tyler and DK kind of with the same number of targets.
Yes.
And
Lockett had more last year.
Yeah,
and DK had more yards.
Exactly. Lockett had more receptions than DK. And look, DK is going to be playing for a new contract here. He wants to be one of those guys that resets the wide receiver market. And I mean, look, he's got youth on his side and he's got production on his side. Those are two great things to have when you are looking for a new deal. I think DK is going to be one of those guys that really wants the ball this season. And I don't, there's no bad thing about throwing to DK as many times as you do.
Now, the best thing we can do to try to figure out what we think Shane Waldron's offense is going to look like is to look to Sean McVay's offense, right? That is his background. That's his history. They actually both have similar histories as tight end coaches in the same system. And so I think that Tyler Lockett is the kind of receiver you'd think would excel. And the best case scenario for Seattle is that you have another situation this year where you have no true number one, because one guy's going to have a ton of receptions and be a great fit for the system, and one guy's going to be making these improbable plays that show up on Twitter all the time that you see. So I would guess, I would wager, Lockett still leads in receptions. He's just such a sure thing. But I wouldn't be shocked to see DK once again lead the team in yards. All right. Now, I was talking with someone who told me he disagreed with me about the Seahawks draft. And I've been very open about saying, you know, for a couple draft classes, they've kind of missed. They've gotten some guys.
A coward.
And someone I will leave nameless.
Wow.
Was you know, doing some friendly ribbing, saying, you know, hey, you know, like, wait on some of these guys. And I can, you know, say what you will about the 2013, 14, 15 classes that maybe didn't give you everything you were hoping, or 2017 or whatever. But some of these recent classes still have some guys that I think people should be keeping an eye on. And it is a little too early to write them off just yet. I have my own critiques about previous drafts. I do have them. I'm standing by them. I'm not backing down. But a guy like Marquise Blair that still hasn't had a real shot at going out and being an impact player, I think this team is very, very keen on him. And he looked great out there.
Second round picks in back-to-back years, Daryl Taylor and Marquise Blair. Second round picks, those are starter level caliber rookies. And to get both of those guys back healthy in this season, I mean, that is going to be a huge lift for the Seahawks. Maybe not just in the starting lineup, but also depth-wise, because Marquise Blair, obviously the secondary is kind of built out as to maybe what we kind of expected to be in week one. Blair is there. He can play the nickel. He can also play both safety spots. Very versatile guy and somebody that I think Pete Carroll is excited to use. He gets him for a full season. And then Daryl Taylor, we heard so much about him last year, especially during the time where the Seahawks were so desperate for any kind of pass rush help. He's here. He's healthy. And looking at the additions that the Seahawks made on the defensive line this offseason, I don't expect them to have as slow of a start as they did a year ago.
All right, last one here. John Ursua.
Text line is blowing
is
up.
Blowing
it's
up.
Gonna, oh, man.
He has remained a fan favorite. I don't know how it started. It started with maybe him being so likable in the offseason. Maybe it was the 100 yards on, I think, four receptions in his rookie preseason. Whatever it was, people constantly ask, hey, what's the latest with John Ursua? Tell us what he's been doing. Now, it looks like he's getting lots of work in on special teams. There are, unless I'm miscounting, 13 receivers that are going to be competing for five or six spots. You can already take off the top. Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, Dwayne Eskridge, and I'll go ahead and throw in Freddie Swain. Check. Now you've got Penny Hart, John Ursua, probably taking up those two other spots, but they're competing with a full room, Curtis, Aaron Fuller, Cade Johnson, Darvin Kidsey, a couple guys, kind of walk-ons, undrafted rookies, Dreece Robertson, Connor Weddington, Cody Thompson. All these guys are in there competing for time, and they're going to be really, really pushing. And you and I can both think of a couple receivers that came in as undrafted rookies and surprised this team. So John Ursua's got a good edge on these guys, but this is a packed room. This is going to be a really fun battle in kind of those last two spots on the receiver depth.
Excited to see it. And with the kick return, punt return job open as well, that's a way one of these guys can sneak their way onto the roster and make themselves a valuable commodity, not just in the receiving game, but in the return game as well. We know Tyler Lockett's return days are over. They're paying him too much money, mm-hmm. and he's too important to the passing game for him to be back there returning punts and kicks. So there's plenty of opportunity for these guys like John Ursua and like the other undrafted free agents you mentioned to crack this roster. I'm excited to see that battle play out in the preseason. We get a preseason this year, too.
I know.
3 weeks of it.
Yeah, three games.
Better make it count.
It's very weird being back out here, I got to tell you guys. Even though there was a year in between when no fans, not a ton of media was out here, it feels like we're just popping back out. It's very strange. But that is your takeaways, are your takeaways from day one of Seahawks training camp, and we're going to have even more, and Jake is going to have some from day two. Lots to talk about tomorrow. Right now, though, let's get to Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
All right, first down to you, Curtis. You're out at training camp for the first time. What's your immediate thought when you look at the Seahawks on the field?
Well, we just saw the defense go through a morning walkthrough here. And the most pleasant sight to me, we talked about it in Stacy's takeaways there, was seeing Daryl Taylor out on the field. He practiced, one time last year, I think it was? And it was in the weeks leading up to the playoff game. Didn't get out during a game, was never on the active roster, but he's out here today. Saw him getting his work in. It's so encouraging to see him on the field. I am so excited to see what he can do for this Seahawks team in technically year two, but really his first year. I think there's plenty of meat left on that bone for the Seahawks to get something out of him because, look, you drafted him in the second round for a reason.
In the first.
Yeah, we talked to the guy who they took in the first round in the same draft class, and that was Jordan Brooks. So I am super excited to see Daryl Taylor out there and just keep him healthy, keep him upright, so he's there in week one.
Now, I will say Pete Carroll did say that Daryl Taylor, that accidentally rhymes, was maybe the most impressive story from rookie camp because Taylor obviously there. And, like, we saw him definitely on the field. He's out there. I mean, he looks good. You aren't going to get a great measure of how the defensive guys are until the regular season. Well, certainly preseason, but otherwise you don't really get a good test in training camp. But he looks great, you guys. I'm telling you.
Second down. Stacy. Dolphins cornerback Xavien Howard. I think you could say he's a little unhappy in Miami right now.
A little bit.
Would you trade for him?
I wouldn't. And I might kick myself for saying that because I was all about potentially trading for Stephon Gilmore and making a couple other different moves in the offseason. But I think that this team, first of all, really does believe in the corners that they have. We're going to see how that plays out. I mean, let's say it doesn't. Let's say, worst case scenario, they don't actually have that much depth and it becomes a liability. They're just going to have to end up paying more for some kind of trade before October's trade deadline for the NFL. Hopefully that obviously doesn't happen. I think what you're going to see instead is a cornerback room that may just not be like the core strength of your team, but what they might be gambling on instead is that you save yourself the money and the draft price that it would cost to trade for Howard, and instead you have a great defensive line rotation. Like, I think they're waiting to see, what do we have up front and what do we have in the back before we give up so much that it'll have to cost us some other star, because you don't get to pay everyone. It will cost you some other star in terms of a contract, and you know one guy with a big contract coming up, DK Metcalf.
Third down. All right, Curtis, what is a trade in the NFL you're stunned hasn't happened yet?
I am stunned that Zach Ertz is still on the Philadelphia Eagles roster. Not because I want him here. We all know my thoughts on 31-year-old tight ends or tight ends just north of the
I think you called them, quote, decrepit.
I called one specifically that.
I feel like it's
Do
ageism.
I share that opinion for most of them? Yes.
How about for most people over 30?
Well, as someone who is over 30.
Now you can't.
I am decrepit.
How's it feel?
But I'm stunned that Zach Ertz remains in Philadelphia, not because he wants out, but because Philadelphia is going nowhere. Nick Sirianni, what is he going to do with Zach Ertz? He's not going to do anything with him. Ertz has, he's got just a couple of years left on that deal. I just don't see why Philadelphia is keeping him around. GM Howie Roseman told reporters that he thinks the veteran tight end will still be on the Eagles roster to start the 2021 season. You've got Jalen Hurts at quarterback. I mean, why do you have Zach Ertz still there? I mean, unless it's to help Jalen Hurts, but I just don't see why Zach Ertz and the Eagles, they continue to be together, especially with how vocal Ertz has been about trying to leave there. Philadelphia, what are you doing? You're also tanking its value each and every day you hold on to him. So I'm stunned that trade hasn't happened. Also kind of stunned the Seahawks weren't in on him over the offseason, because we know what Pete Carroll loves, and that is veteran tight ends. Luckily, they got a much better option in Gerald Everett, and I hope that Everett stays healthy so that we don't have to hear Zach Ertz to Seattle rumors.
And let's be real, no one will ever be better than Jimmy Graham.
True. Greatest tight end in NFL history.
That's exactly right. Not even being facetious.
Fourth down. All right, Stacey, the contract situation with the Seahawks that's really going under the radar is the one with Dwayne Brown. Are you concerned about the left tackle not practicing?
I am not right now. Dwayne Brown is one of the older players in this locker room. He was here at the facility. We know that he's not gone. He's checking in. He wasn't out practicing with the team. Pete Carroll was asked about it afterward. Now, there was kind of a, I don't want to say tense, but you could say tense moment when he's asked about the contract and kind of brushes it off right away. And then his answer to why Brown wasn't practicing was like, look, he's an older guy. In the regular season, and I will tell you guys this, in the regular season, Dwayne Brown is not practicing every single day. You just can't really do it to your body when you're at that age. You got to give yourself a little more rest. It takes that full week to recover. I remember talking to another veteran player who was saying, like, I used to feel fine middle of the week, and now it takes me all the way up until, you know, maybe Friday to feel okay, and then you do it all over again. So I don't think fans should be concerned about Dwayne Brown not being here. I think that I look at the Jamal Adams situation, while I said it was a great thing that he was here and on the sideline, as being a little more pressing. Dwayne Brown's been with this team since, October 2017. Before that, he is a veteran. He's a pro. He's got the respect of this locker room for a reason, because he comes in, he does his job, and he does it well. I don't expect that to change this year. He's one of the most important members of this team, but more importantly, he knows what the role is. He knows what the job is. He knows the offense. Even with a new offense, he knows this team. Jamal Adams is in just his second season. Right now, I'm not panicking, but I sure hope the deal with Adams gets done in time for Adams to be able to get some work in with the defense in just his second year in Seattle.
When you've logged as many hours as Dwayne Brown has in his NFL career, and as many accolades as he's piled up, you can kind of set your own schedule.
Yeah, it's kind of like how I'm like a super radio pro.
Yeah, you show up when you want to.
I show up when I want. I leave when I want.
Days.
That's exactly right. It's four down territory. I start talking about things that aren't football related. Maybe I want to get back to Jerry DePoto, and I say, I'm calling an audible. I don't want to do four down territory. I don't care if we do this every day. What I want to talk about is whether Abraham Toro was worth it. text line's still sounding off about that, by
the way.
Yeah, they are fired up.
I think the text line is going to be sounding off about the Abraham Toro trade.
For a while.
For a long while.
What's the most controversial? We have a minute left. What's the most controversial Mariners trade you can think of? Off the top of your head.
In the moment?
In the moment. Top of your head.
Boy.
I'm sure there's more you could think of.
I mean, in hindsight, it's obviously like the Jason Veritek, Derek Lowe for Heathcliff Slocum trade.
What about in the moment? This is one of the...
In the moment where you knew this was a bad trade?
That's the thing. Like, there are bad moves. Now, for instance, drafting Dustin Ackley was not a bad move. He was a highly touted prospect.
He was the greatest college hitter I've ever
seen. It's only things that are bad moves in hindsight. This is one of the only ones that immediately come to mind of, like, in the moment, it was controversial.
In the moment... The most recent example I can think of is all the moves they made at the 2018 trade deadline.
Yeah.
Where you added Adam Warren and Zach Duke and Cameron Maben. All three of those names probably send a shiver down the spine of Mariners fans. So I think back to those, you knew none of those moves were
right. Everyone's saying Jones for Bedard.
Yeah, Jose Adam Cruz, Jones for Eric Bedard.
Adam Jones.
You knew
yeah.
that one was going yep. to come back to bite.
Yeah, that's probably the next closest. Yeah. But yeah, it's.
Su Chu for Ben Broussard. That was another one.
Taylor's just over here nodding along. Yep, pain. All I feel is pain.
For Eduardo Perez. Yeah.
All right. Aaron Rodgers had plenty to say in his first press conference of Packers Camp. Plus, the Big 12 has levied a pretty big accusation against ESPN. Don't go anywhere. It's all coming your way next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by the Pro Club. I'm Stacy Ross here with Curtis Rogers, and we are filling in, waiting for Jake to get here. He'll be here, his return, long-awaited return from paternity leave in hour three. So for right now, we are going to go through the timeline, everything you need to know around the league, the top trends you're going to see on your own timelines, and who else but Aaron Rodgers making headlines all offseason, but certainly the other day when he had his very first press conference with Green Bay media. Couple cuts to play, you guys. So we'll start right here. Cut number 9, Rodgers saying, hey, a lot of players extremely lowballed.
Just the fact that we didn't retain a number of players that I felt like were core players to our foundation, our locker room, high character guys. I'm talking about Charles Woodson, Jordy Nelson, Julius Peppers, Clay Matthews, Randall Cobb, James Jones, John Kuhn, Brett Goode, TJ Lang, Brian Belaga, Casey Hayward, Micah Hyde, guys who were, you know, exceptional players for us, but great locker room guys, high character guys. Many of them who weren't offered a contract at all or were extremely lowballed or were, you know, maybe in my opinion, not given the respect on the way out that guys of their status and stature and high character deserved.
You can hear the frustration in his voice. Let's keep going through a couple of these. Cut number 10, Rodgers talking about a little bit of the power imbalance between him thinking what he should have been able to do and what he was allowed to do.
So I wanted to offer up my services as a recruiter. And I think we can all understand, you know, Green Bay isn't, you know, a huge vacation destination. People are coming here to play with me, to play with our team, and knowing that they can win a championship here. And the fact that I haven't been used in those discussions was one I wanted to change moving forward. And I felt like based on my years, the way I can still play, that should be a natural part of the conversation. As that progressed from that point, nothing really changed on that front.
I think there might be some people hearing him say, you know, they want to come here and play with me, that might roll their eyes just because of our natural tendency to kind of roll our eyes at open displays of, you know, ego or whatever. But that's true. That
yeah.
is true.
Where's
people are going there to play with Aaron Rodgers. They're going there to play for the Packers.
What have the Green Bay Packers been outside of the eras of Bart Starr, Brett Favre, and Aaron Rodgers? They've been a complete afterthought. You need a super duper star quarterback in order to make that team work and make that team go. Because if not, you're just another outpost town
mm-hmm.
with an NFL team. Like the Packers, without a superstar quarterback at the helm, are not going to be a team of relevance.
No, Aaron Rodgers is not wrong in saying that. And I'm honestly a little surprised if what he's saying is true, that the team wasn't letting him help with calling guys, because we've heard not just about Russell Wilson doing that, about Tom Brady doing that with the Buccaneers. It seems like one of the best resources a team can use is, hey, I'm going to let my quarterback make this call for me. I'm going to let other guys, I'm going to let Dwayne Brown call up someone and say, like, hey, this is a great place to play for. Come here. Let's keep going through these cuts just quickly, and then we'll jump to our next story here, that big allegation against ESPN by the Pig 12. First, from Aaron Rodgers again, cut number 11. This is that quarterback situation he's talking about.
If you can't commit to me past 2021, and I'm not a part of recruiting process and free agency, if I'm not a part of the future, then instead of letting me be a lame duck quarterback, if you want to make a change and move forward, then go ahead and do it. That obviously didn't happen. Like I said, it wasn't a draft day thing. There were conversations for a number of months leading up to that. Post the draft, I think what basically happened was then they said, we'll give you some money now. Let's see if we can throw some money at you. I said from the start it wasn't about the money.
And one more here, cut number 12, Aaron Rodgers making it clear, I'm not the victim.
I'm not a victim here at all. I just want to reiterate that. Like, I've been paid a ton of money by this organization. I'm so thankful to be a starter here for my 14th season. Not many guys have the opportunity to do that. So I'm not, I don't feel like anything's been done to me. There is, it's a business. It's an incredible opportunity to play this game. It's a tough business too, though, and this is part of it. So I totally get that point, and that's not lost on me. That's why I'm just going to enjoy this season like I did last year, have the right perspective, and then make decisions at the end of the season.
Aaron Rodgers saying he's not a victim here, that is something that victims say, or something that people who try to paint themselves as victims say. And if Aaron Rodgers hadn't said all of what he had said prior to that in his press conference, I might have believed him if he said, I'm not a victim here. He's trying to come off as like, look, I've been doing my job and whatnot. But as we kind of noticed in the 2020 NFC Championship game against the 49ers, did you do all you could in order to beat that 49ers team? Because that game was over late first quarter, early second quarter. Aaron Rodgers, you may not think of yourself as a victim, but you're doing your darndest to paint yourself as such.
Whew. Hot fire in the timeline, thank Curtis. You. Let me jump to the next story here. Big 12, you've been seeing it trending all over Twitter. Well, that's, you know, because of this. The Big 12 alleges that ESPN tried to, quote, destabilize the conference and conspired with the SEC and American Athletic Conference to poach teams. Now, we already know the situation happening with the Big 12, with Texas and Oklahoma formally, you know, requesting to go over to the SEC, and something that would start in 2025 if it were to be accepted. Correct,
we
Curtis?
Know it's going to happen sooner.
We know it's going to happen sooner than that, but that process officially underway with their hope that they can go over to the SEC. Now, Big 12 saying the ESPN, you're in on this.
How legit do you think these allegations are? That ESPN, who is in charge of the college football playoff and has so many media deals with conferences across the NCAA, do you think that ESPN had their hands in the cookie jar here when it came to conference realignment?
According to the article that I read about this on ESPN, no.
I mean, on ESPN.com.
Yeah.
Of course.
So, I mean, what can I say? I mean, I'm looking at the article right here.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you know, I think that this is something that is probably a widespread thing. We talked about the potential for USC, for instance, maybe going independent or leaving the Pac-12. Like, I don't think that Texas and Oklahoma are alone in wanting to take a little more control over their schools. And to that front, there's been kind of a constant battle between the NCAA and member institutions, and then sometimes conferences and their member institutions. Like, that's not anything new. I don't know. Do you think ESPN had anything to do with it? I don't know that they have a rooting interest either way, unless there's an obvious one I'm missing outside of just the coverage from it. And those two schools being big schools.
I think they do have a rooting interest because they just launched the SEC network. Texas and Oklahoma have two of the biggest fan bases in all of college football. They even gave Texas their own network a few years ago. So I think ESPN does have a rooting interest in what conferences have what teams. I mean, it's so tough to prove this.
I know.
Like, where do you even start in order to prove that this is even feasible?
You can't. By the way, a new thing for from now on via the text line. Thank you to this texter, 710-710. Anytime we talk about Rodgers, we're going to have you sound off, and it's going to be Rodgers on Rodgers.
Okay. I like that.
I like it, too. All right. Coming up, it's Hype Train. We didn't get to it Wednesday with a short show. It's one of my favorite games to play with you guys, and we're going to play it next. We'll start with this one. Sam Farmer of the LA Times thinks we need to pit one phrase, one sports cliched phrase, to bed. We're done with it. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Live from the sidelines at Seahawks training camp.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Now here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
All right, you guys, one of my favorite games. Normally we do this on Wednesdays. We had a short show yesterday, so me and Curtis are ready to take you now to the station for Hype Train. All right, let's start with this one. It was started by Sam Farmer, a writer for the LA Times, was watching Saturday's NBC broadcast of the Olympics, and he says the host referred to both Simone Biles and Katie Ledecky as the GOAT. Sam says, I don't know. They may be. They're certainly fantastic. But that phrase is cliched, tired, and starting to lose its meaning. So here's the hype train, Curtis. I'll start with you. Tell me if you're boarding. And DJ, you can sound off too if you want. We need to stop using the phrase, the GOAT.
I am not getting on that train, and I'll tell you why. Because I think each sport is allowed to have a GOAT. You can be the greatest of your sport. And I think of all sports, there's allowed to be one GOAT. But if you're saying multiple people within that sport are GOATs, that can't work. That can't fly. But would I say Katie Ledecky is the greatest women's swimmer of all time? Yes. Would I say Simone Biles is the greatest gymnastics athlete of all time? Yes. But the greatest Olympian ever? Michael Phelps. Like,
ooh,
26
okay, yeah. Well, Olympian,
medals,
sure,
or whatever.
Yes, yeah.
I would say Michael Phelps is the greatest Olympian ever. But within their own discipline, they are the GOATs of those. I don't think we need to retire the phrase.
No, I don't either. I completely agree. It's something where, like, you can't have just one GOAT greatest of all time. We've had so many fantastic athletes come through. You're going to tell me that, like, oh, well, Brady gets to be the GOAT, or Jordan gets to be the GOAT, or Ali gets to be the GOAT, because that's it. There's no one else. And it's like, well, Simone Biles is crushing everyone else in gymnastics. Like, went 8 years not losing a single meet. DJ, what do you think? I say no. Curtis says no. Do we need to stop using the phrase the GOAT? Are you boarding that hype train?
No, I'm not boarding the hype train. Every sport, as you guys have said, deserve to have their own GOAT. Katie Ledecky, fantastic woman swimmer. Simone Biles might be, would you say she's the second greatest Olympian of all time, right under Michael Phelps? I mean, but she's the GOAT in gymnastics. So, no, I don't retire the word GOAT. Definitely not.
All right. Someone else on the text line saying one sports phrase we should be done with, though. Quote, if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
That's a GOAT debate right there. That's a debate.
All right.
That might be the greatest.
That train leaving the station. No one aboard. Next train coming through. Pete Carroll said everything's amicable between the team and Jamal Adams, their star safety, who does not have a contract extension yet. He said, Carroll, that he's hopefully a deal will get done soon. So here's the hype train. Curtis first, DJ second. Tell me if you're boarding. A deal with Adams will get done in the next 2 weeks.
I'm boarding this train. I think a deal does get done. Oh, yeah. Play on that horn. I think a deal gets done between the two sides. As we talked about earlier, you got to be present to negotiate, just like you got to be present to win any raffle that you enter. You got to be present to negotiate. You got to be present to get the Seahawks to listen to what you have to say. Jamal Adams is here. He is in uniform. Obviously, he's not going to be practicing full speed with the guys because he's got plenty of earning potential still unsettled right now. But he's here, which only can bode well for him. I think a deal does get done within the next 2 weeks.
DJ, you think a deal gets done for Adams in the next 2 weeks?
Yes, I am boarding this hype train. It doesn't really sound like this is a dispute. It's more of just, let's just meet in the middle here. And I think it's going to get done on Wednesday during the Mariners broadcast when we can't report on it live. I think that's what's going to happen.
Of course.
Ooh,
perfect timing.
Someone's saying greatest Olympian debate, Jesse Owens, because he stood for so much
one.
More. That's a really good take.
Four gold medals at the 36 Olympics.
And most importantly, the timing of them and what it stood for.
Yeah.
Yes,
in Nazi
absolutely.
Germany, of course.
All right, next type train here. Oh, I'm boarding that one, too. We got so many to go through, though. Okay, so the Mariners made two trades so far. You've got the very controversial trade that kicked everything off less than 24 hours after their win over the Astros, sending Kendall Graveman and Rafael Montero to Houston in exchange for reliever Joe Smith and switch hitter infielder Abraham Toro. They made a second trade, sending two younger prospects over to, was it Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh,
over
yeah.
to Pittsburgh for a starting pitcher.
Tyler Anderson,
who as a plus has made it through five innings or more in each of his starts this season, certainly figures into middle of the rotation at least and going to help you down the road. You needed a starting pitcher. There was no way they couldn't do it. Jerry DePoto has promised, seemingly, that they aren't done yet, but will they make more trades? This is the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding. The Mariners will follow through with Jerry DePoto's promise for more trades.
I so desperately want to get on this train.
You are getting on this train.
I so want to be there.
Curtis.
I so do. But, boy, seeing what they've gotten in return, as opposed to what the A's and Yankees, the two teams that are also fighting for that second wild card spot. Look, Tyler Anderson may be a good pitcher, and Abraham Toro may develop into something down the road. But at this current stage, he is not Starling Marte, who the A's got. But they did have to part with a top-of-the-line prospect, Jesus Luzardo. He's not what Joey Gallo is going to bring to the Rangers' offense. So I am not getting on this train. I don't think Jerry DePoto is going to be able to follow through on his promise for more trades.
DJ, you getting on this train? The Mariners will follow through with Jerry DePoto's promise for more trades. If you're buying it, you're boarding the hype train. If not, you're letting it go on by.
I will not be boarding this hype train, mainly because the two names that the Mariners have most recently been attached to, Jose Berríos and Whit Merrifield. Whit Merrifield, as Salk was saying yesterday, the asking price has just been too high is what he's been hearing. So I don't think they'll be getting someone like Whit Merrifield. Jose Berríos, John Morosi was saying it's going to take someone like Emerson Hancock or George Kirby. I don't think they're comfortable with giving up trading one of those two top pitching prospects. And I don't think they're going to be trading like Haniger or Seager. I don't think they're going to be selling at all. So I will not be boarding this hype train.
DJ, you took us right into our next hype train, so I'm going to I am boarding this hype train. I think we're going to see another deal. So I'll board it. I'll be on it. One on the train. But
congrats, Stacey.
Let's see the other train coming in here, because DJ, with a nice little transition straight to it. Curtis, here is the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding, also related to the Mariners trades. The Mariners will part ways with one of George Kirby or Emerson Hancock.
If I said yes to getting on this train, that would mean I would think the Mariners are trading
George
Kirby.
That's exactly right. You have no choice but to not get on the train.
Yeah, so I will not get on this train. I think George Kirby and Emerson Hancock remain Mariners past the trade deadline, and they don't make Baseball America have to reprint covers of their latest
can you imagine?
Their latest magazine, because they're both on the cover.
DJ,
staring us down.
I know. DJ, you already said you don't think they're dealing either of these guys.
Yeah, I don't think so. They're too young. They have too much upside. You know, Kirby, he doesn't walk anybody. Emerson Hancock, he keeps getting compared to Walker Buehler, who's a very good pitcher for the Los Angeles Dodgers. I don't think they're willing to give up on the upside of both of those guys.
All right, text line agreeing with both of you guys. Let's go to the last hype train here. I was telling you guys earlier, we're out at Seahawks camp live from the VMAC. Guy's going to hit the field in a little over 30 minutes here. Fans already flooding the field over here. What's it called? The berm.
The berm.
The berm. Fans on the berm. And you know who else has been running around before the players hit the field? That's Turf. Turf the dog. The Seahawks kind of field dog. He's a chocolate lab. I have watched him in so many practices since I've been covering this team. I've never pet him, and it breaks my heart.
It's wild.
Here's the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding. Stacy will pet Turf at training camp this year.
I mean, we've still got about a month left.
I've got a month
of camp.
I want to touch that dog. I want to touch that dog real
bad. I don't
bad.
Think you could possibly go a full month without Turf just wandering over to our booth.
I saw him go over to fans, and fans were touching him.
I mean,
it's like, why not me? Like Russell Wilson says, why not me?
Stacy, I don't want to break this to you, but Turf is far more famous than anybody right now in Seattle sports media.
1,000%.
Why would Turf turn down the
fans? You're saying like I might be hurting his social capital.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. That'll
hate
do
to
it
break
for
it to you,
hype train.
But I think you will be able to pet turf. So I'm getting on that hype
Thank
train.
You. Thank you for being a good friend, Curtis.
There we go.
DJ, I can only assume you're boarding as well.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Stacey.
All right. And we're done now. Jake Heap's going to be joining us for our final segment of the day. He is returning from paternity leave, and he'll be watching training camp as well. So we'll have lots of awesome takeaways for tomorrow. But you don't have to wait until tomorrow for plenty of Seahawks news, because coming up next, we've been counting down the 15 most important Seahawks of training camp. There are a couple names we haven't gotten to yet. Russell Wilson, Dwayne Brown, Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, Bobby Wagner. Where do those guys fall on this list? We're at number 7 next. Don't go anywhere. Yeah.